This is HBR episode 2741 entitled, HBR Community News for January 2019, and is part of the series, HBR Community News. It is hosted by HBR volunteers, and is about 77 minutes long, and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, Yannick, Dave, and Ken talk about shows released, and comments posted in January 2019.
This episode of HBR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Greetings, humans! You are listening to HBR Community News for January 2019. Joining me tonight are...
Hi, it's Dave.
Hi, it's Yannick.
So, Dave, crawling back after missing last month?
Oh, I know. I'm so ashamed of myself.
How are you
feeling? Trying not to feel... Yeah, I'm fine. It just took a long time to get over that, whatever it was.
Okay. And Yannick, how are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Go ahead, over.
It's a bit snowy here in Switzerland. We had lots of snow and lots of wind, so it's a bit cold, but I managed to not get any not flu.
Okay, very good. So this, ladies and gentlemen, is HBR Community News for January 2019, and HBR is Community Podcast Network, where the shows are contributed by people like you. And we sometimes forget that. And I think it's very important to remember that while you hear a lot of voices on the network that you're familiar with, you shouldn't. You should only hear each of those voices once a year. That is because there are 260 slots. There are definitely loads more people who listen to this show. And if everything was working correctly, people would not have enough space to submit shows. So you're listening to the show, you listen to more than two podcasts, then you should really consider contributing back to the community by, first of all, introducing us to yourself, telling us what you do, why you're listening to podcasts, and basically saying hello. What do you think of that, chaps?
Sounds like a good idea to me.
Yeah, and it's really not that complicated. I mean, everyone has a phone in their pocket, so just press record and send the audio.
Yep. And all the rest of the stuff, becoming an expert, worrying about the ums and ahs, doing good show notes, all that can come later. But first thing is send in shows. The reason I want to harp on a little bit about this was we've already had a call for shows already this year. So that's not good, really. In the wintertime, there's usually plenty of wintertime, Northern Hemisphere, obviously. There's plenty of time to be recording shows, and actually during the summertime the schools are off, guys, in New Zealand and Australia, so no excuse not to have some time to record a show and send them on in. Anyway, this show we put on once a month to make sure that everybody gets some feedback on the shows that have occurred in the previous month. And the previous month started with mobile device security by Edward Miro, who is also known as Cypher. Did you guys listen to?
Yes, I did.
Yep, me too. It scares me every time I hear things like this.
Yes.
I wonder why I have a smartphone in my pocket.
Yes. Go ahead.
It's funny because people tend to secure their servers and PC and home router and everything, and yet how phones are the first thing we're going to root or a jailbreak to install applications from shady app stores. While this is perhaps the single place where you have pretty much all your life.
Yeah.
So it's a bit strange.
Although I do exactly what he says you shouldn't do for the reasons that he's giving the show. I have my phone and I root it so that I install everything just from F-Droid. Nothing else gets installed unless it's on F-Droid. And I trust those guys to have done their due diligence because they don't even allow, they only allow free and open source software in there and give you a warning. So, and the applications are usually take a long time to go on there. But I route it so that I can put a firewall on. And then you really see what's going on because you have all these pop-ups for applications that are going out to websites that you're going, why is this going out there? Very, very interesting.
Yes. I was just discussing with my son putting Lineage OS on my OnePlus
One. Yep.
And he was demonstrating his, which has got on and all of the controls you have. I have a Cyanogen derivative at the moment, but which has a fair bit. But yeah. But it feels like an enemy, my phone. I don't know. Do you feel that
exactly.
way? So I don't like it very much.
Until I have Lineage running on it, I don't trust the phone. I just don't trust anything on it. And but anyway, that's a digression from this show. I am actually planning in the fullness of time on doing a episode on that. So hashtag I owe myself a show. So there was one comment on that, and that was read by sent in by RTSN !! Good episode !! Probably
must have been very good then.
I think that that actually does summarize the feeling of that show. So moving on to the next day, what is turning out to be one of my favorite series here on HPR is Genres in Storytelling, Lost in Bronx, looking into the importance of genres in storytelling. And I don't know if you listened to his Voice from the Void podcast, which is open to Patreon subscribers, hint, hint. And this guy, Lost in Bronx, who's also known as... Oh, what's Lost in Bronx's real name?
David Collins Rivera.
That's the bunny, David Collins Rivera. He will always be Lost in Bronx to me. The amount of effort he puts into his craft is just amazing, absolutely amazing. It's worth it. Just throw the guy a dollar and download the Voice from the Void podcast and have a listen to it if you're into, even if you're not into stories or space operas or stuff, the level of detail that he has on his the world that he's building is absolutely incredible. Makes me run from storytelling. To be honest.
Yes.
You're ruining it for me, Lost in Bronx. You're ruining it. I thought I was just sitting down and writing something, but no. So there was no comments on that for some reason. Don't know why. And the following day, we had Bash Tips 17. This time it's personal. Bash Arrays Part 2. Dave, why? It's Auxiliary Bash Tips. Is that what it's called? Well, additional auxiliary bash tips.
Somebody was hacking my show titles and adding things to them. So I decided to go back to the silly titles. I've got a matrix of the things. So this one became additional auxiliary bash tips just to stop that person from their vandalism.
From doing that, yes.
Yes.
Abusing the power that was laid before them. Some guy called Ken Fallon says things I didn't know. I didn't know about the substring manipulation, and also found out why the following works. Their name source with a #, so the file names extensions. But of course, Dave has to correct me.
Well, not exactly, but just extended rift on that subject. So, yeah, I try not to use dir name and base name anymore because you can do it in the shell itself, but each to his own.
What I find amazing with this series is that 17 episodes ago from this series I thought I knew bash And now 19 episodes later, I feel like I didn't know anything about that. And I still learn something, at least one thing every episode. And now, Dave, you've turned my life into a nightmare because every time I write a bash script, I have a little voice in my head that said, that's not how you should do it.
I actually have a voice in my head, as we'll see later on.
I also have that voice, though, because it's saying, surely there's a better way of doing this. There must be a more efficient way of doing this. So I'm hag-ridden myself with this sort of stuff. The other thing is that when I first started using Bash, you go and look at that man page, and it's vast.
Yeah.
And you think, how am I ever going to understand this? So my goal was to sort of pick out individual bits and then learn them. And then I thought, oh, I could do shows on this as well. So you're suffering along with me.
Yeah, but it's really, really nice series. I love it.
Yeah, good. Yeah. It's, well, I like to share these things, so hopefully people are getting stuff out of it.
No, we are. I am, because I've been using stuff for years. I'm wondering why it's worked, and now I'm beginning to understand it. The following day was an episode by myself, which was downloading YouTube channels using the RSS feed, which is a thing actually that you put me on to, Dave, and I like it. This is how I'm listening to YouTube videos now.
Yeah. I don't actually do that myself, although I knew it existed. So I found that really helpful to have that sort of different viewpoint on it. And it also gave me a chance to do a show at some point. So.
Yes. Well, this is all part of my phone series that I haven't done yet, but now that I'm telling people about, I'll probably do it in 20 years. And that is how to minimize, you know, data usage and use Wi-Fi and stuff. So I got my mobile phone usage down from 4 gigabytes a month down to 300 megabytes some months.
Wow.
So all of that is, basically don't watch videos online. That's a bad thing.
Yeah, that's really good, actually. Yeah, I was bitten by that very seriously when I first had a smartphone. So, yeah, these are good lessons, I'm sure.
So the following day, we had the community news. Well, actually, it was a Monday. Community news for December 2018, and the comments from Dave. Do you want to read your own comic? Comment?
comment. It's not that comic.
It's not that funny.
It's hilarious.
So I said, very nice show. Thanks, Yannick. I really enjoyed listening to this. Very well done. It's also great to hear Jeroen, how do you say
Jeroen,
that? Jeroen. I've said this so many times, and anyway, sorry, Jeroen. On the community news again, the record, the HPR muggers at Old Camp 2018 that you mentioned, that suggested he join us, were JWP and myself. And I said I caught something a bit like flu after Christmas. Kind of been flu because I had my flu shot. Anyway, the not flu or its aftermath is still hanging on 3 weeks later. Cough, cough.
Yes, you can still hear it in your voice.
Yes, it's odd.
And hint, Ocamp 2019 is actually going to take place in October this year.
October, yes. That's an interesting time. And where has it been held?
At Manchester.
I actually wondered, I'd love to hear the answer to this, because every year there's a big skeptical conference in Manchester called QED, and they're skipping a year this year. And I wondered if that meant there were more openings for doing OCAMP. So I'd be fascinated to see whether they choose the same place that QED normally uses.
I like that it's in Manchester, because my plane will land in Manchester, so that means no need to take a train to go to wherever it's going to be.
Yeah. Oh, it'll be really handy, yeah. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Manchester, UK, 10th anniversary spectacular.
Yes. And we'll be there, right?
Perhaps. Do we know what location?
No, they haven't decided yet. No.
Who's the main people? Who's driving it?
I don't know.
You know what? I don't know either.
No, actually. I'm not sure if it's John the Nice Guy again.
I know it's not John, but I don't know who is... in charge this year.
Oh, cool. Well, I'd be interested to find out.
It would be great anyway.
Okay, I'm going to stop Googling flights and move there's back a, to the comments.
Comment.
Yes, there's another comment.
Do you want to read them when you go on? While I Google my flight.
Yeah, okay. So,
actually, it's DuckDuckGo, just so you know.
So, Windigo said, listening through the back catalog, I'm one of the folks listening through the HPR back catalog in descending order. Other episodes are often still relevant, and those that are a little dated are still fascinating from a historical perspective. Like Ken mentioned, this is also a fantastic way to flesh out the tags and summaries on other episodes. It only takes a few extra minutes per show, and yes, it's true, we need, HPR needs volunteers to tag old shows so that we can find them more easily.
And Windigo is somebody who does contribute quite often to that project.
He is. Nice guy.
Thanks. Thank you, Windigo.
He does have a tendency to submit too many shows at once, but other than that failing, he's a nice guy. So the following day, we had a drive-by episode with JWP, Raid 6, A Short Description, which was interesting, actually. Two protective drives.
Yeah.
Go on. Go ahead.
No. That's all I had to say.
Oh, okay. Because we're tending to sort of clash, or at least I do anyway. Just going to say I didn't know Raid 6 all that well, so I found it quite useful to get JWP's pointer to it. So I then went off and read up more about it.
There are so many flavors of Raids. I always mix them up.
Yeah, me too.
Okay, I'm dragging myself away from airport search sites and coming back to the next episode, which was using ELM in the context of a 4X game client. This can only be Turo Toto talks about the decisions on structuring ELM applications. And I did have to follow along with this by reading the show notes, to be honest. And I'm beginning to think that I might, at some point in the future, understand his shows.
Yeah. I think we're all in that same position. You're all thinking, I really must go and research Haskell in more detail and work out what all these things are doing. So it looks fascinating.
Yeah. As I said last month, this episode, I was in the car when I listened to that, and it did kind of fly over my head, and it flew. Yeah, so it flew over my head, sorry. But yeah, still, I'm still interested in checking out Haskell.
It's a completely different way of writing. The whole syntax seems completely different to anything that I've come across before. But it's a good series. Keep it up. Don't let the fact that I can't follow it in any way deter you from. Because I'm closer now than I was.
Yeah, you know, it's like when you're learning a foreign language and you listen to songs or text. At the beginning, you just like pick up a word maybe in a sentence, and then it becomes clearer and clearer, and then one day you say, "Oh, that's what it means."
Yeah, I get it.
Keep doing this show, please.
Yes, indeed. And the notes are great. I must compliment him on the quality of the notes. They're brilliant.
Helps a lot.
Yeah, very much. And if you're listening to this, to his shows on this, and you're not familiar with Haskell, I mean, Haskell people, I think Clacky is having no problem going following along. But if you're not, then the show notes really do help. The following day, a DIN rail to mount your Raspberry Pis. Somebody shoving the fact that they've got a 3D printer in your face.
Hey, you know what? I got one too.
Me. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and where are all the 3D printer shows, guys?
Well, coming. I'm still learning.
Yes. This is an interesting one. I'm interested to see how Dust would work basically over time. That said, I have three Raspberry Pis down in the basement just screwed to a piece of board, so fair enough.
Yeah, I know. The Dust issue does bother me slightly, but my Pis are just floating about all over the place, and they do have dust in the fittings. I just go and use a blower to blow them out every so often. Because we have a cat. We have a cat that tends to wander about over the pies and stuff. So you get cat hair all over the place, you know.
Yeah. No, good show, Dave. Keep sending them in. And it'd be interesting getting an update on this one in about 2 or 3 years, how you progress with it.
Yeah. I want to develop the whole idea. Maybe see if we could stack them and wall mount them or something like that.
Mm. The Illuminous, the following day, Illuminous Shutdown Command explained a short podcast about the Illuminous OS Shutdown Command, which is a clone of Solaris. And this is actually one of JWP's episodes that caused a lot of stir, actually. Claudio M made a comment about Open Solaris, and Tlatu had the facility to be able to investigate it and do a show. And Claudio M says, quite a different shutdown, a very informative episode. I hadn't realized how different the shutdown command functions on Illuminous-based operating systems is from the BSDs and Linux. You've also inspired me to make a HPR episode on a similar command with the same name in another OS I have to use from time to time. Well now, Claudio M owes me a show. Right there, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
Indeed. I think he knows how the game's played, though, so I think they're gonna get one. Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I used to manage Sun systems at one time, but I have to admit that I never noticed that shutdown was anything different, because that's all we had at the time, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what's interesting is that he said in this episode that like init 5 is the way to halt or reboot the system. On Unix, run level 5 is actually the multi-user run level. So switching from one to the other can be really, you know, if you come from Linux and you want to switch to multi-user run level, you have to take care to not stop your server.
Wow. And I don't even think a lot of people running Linux now knows about the run levels.
Yeah. You don't bother with that now.
No, it used to be a big thing, all right. Switch to run level blah. And then down,
there was a time you were logging in on the console, and then you had to run level 5 to init 5 by hand.
Yeah. What just happened? Where am I? Okay. The next day we had Home Theater Part 2 software high level. And this one was sent in by Operator. Very, very detailed explanation. He already did a show on the hardware of the setup, and this is a detailed explanation on the software, which was a lot. It's got Kodi, Plex, Subsonic, Spider Oak, ZoneMinder. Wow, what this thing can't do.
Yeah, lots of stuff that I did use before my Netflix era.
And it was hard.
Yeah.
His Google Docs notes looked really impressive. That's linked in the show notes here.
I also took a PDF of them and attached those as well.
Yeah, we discussed that, didn't we? That these things can be fairly ephemeral, I think.
More about that later. So RTSN. Also exclamation mark, saying, cool, thanks for sharing a very interesting episode. It's nice to get some feedback. Thank you very much. And the following day, privacy and security, we had Edward Miro again, Cypher, already sending in two shows in January. You should feel guilty! Okay. About passwords and security, about good passwords and to use password managers, two-factor authentication. Couldn't agree more.
Well, yeah, I did one step further using those tools. I have now a Bitwarden instance that I do host myself. So not only do I use a password manager, but I am in control of my data.
Yes.
Very good.
I use KeePass X locally.
Yeah.
And then sync it into Git.
Yeah, I do similar thing. And I'm sorry.
I was saying I didn't think about syncing the KeePass file with Git, which is, it's. I should look into that.
Seems very logical, Captain.
Yeah, I might do an HPR PZ on that.
You think, okay, fine.
I liked his password creation advice.
Yeah.
Because it's pretty similar to what we used to use when I worked at my last job at the university. We used to tell the students and the staff to do something very similar to that. And I've never heard anybody else say that. Probably because I don't listen to enough people talking about passwords. But I was really pleased that he talked about that and explained it quite well too.
Sorry, go ahead.
Much more effective than using password 1, password 2, password 3.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
If you're taking all your passwords from the password manager, then you only really need one really good password to maintain that. And then I tell people to use a variation on the horse battery thing, but instead of changing letters for a lot, the only issue I have with some of this is that the @ people know that's another ancillary for A. So you get that quite a lot in dictionary attacks, that they will just try Apple and then they'll try the @ pull. So you want to be just careful on that one. So what I tend to do is advise people maybe to create their own letters, like a pipe symbol, the dash, and a pipe symbol would be H, for example. I never use that one myself and will never use it. But, you know, there you go. So that sort of thing.
Basically, you need to use a lead text generator on your password.
Well, not even lead text. It's like every letter is composed of three other letters. So I don't know. Let me have a look. I might be the pipe with a period afterwards, or a period and then a dash would be two extended letters, and it looks like an I on its side to you if you're crazy drunk. I've never used that, but if you look at the keyboard, you can kind of go, I can make letters with the other letters, and then every time I use that, or some of the time I use that letter, I will replace it for those 2-3 combinations of extended characters. But not all the time. Anyway, coming out of the rabbit hole, moving to the next show, the unreliable narrator in storytelling. And I had one comment on that, which is from myself. As a means of telling two stories, so my comment was that basically Lost in Bronx explains why you would use the unreliable narrator and gives some examples. And I said, "Hi Lost in Bronx, love the show as ever. It got me thinking that I enjoyed Usual Suspects and Fight Club as two well-executed movies. Both had me going back to watch it again to see how they fooled me. I would argue that The Sixth Sense took the premise of unreliable narrators and did something unique that set it apart from the other two. Namely, they produced two entirely different films from the same series of pictures. The first time I saw it, I watched a horror film starring Bruce Willis and saw a story about a man who discovers the truth. The second time I watched it, I saw a drama starring Haley Joel Osment and saw a story about a boy struggling to accept that he is different and having to deal with difficult situations and learning to trust again. After listening to your show, I realized that this was only possible because both characters were unreliable narrators, one unknowing and the other using it as a tool to help." There you go. Profound things you hear on a bus.
I think you're spun with The Sixth Sense. I mean, the second time you watch it, it's not the same film.
No,
it's not the same movie.
It's not the same movie at all. Yeah. Whereas the other two movies are the same movie. It's just, I didn't see that.
There's a hint in The Sixth Sense when you watch it and you don't know that. It's that I think every time, what was it? So something with his wife wearing red.
Yes,
Something red. Yeah, the red thing, and the second time I watched the movie, I didn't know that. So I didn't notice that. And then I learned about that. So I went back again, to watch it. Yeah, the third time. And okay. And it all makes sense. And it's a good movie and a good episode too from HPR.
Yep. Bash tips 18, a raisin bash, extra auxiliary bash tips. Thanks, Dave. I have to insist on you continuing that those extra names.
Well, yeah. I'm just writing episode 20 where I just explain what I'm doing.
Some of these ones are very useful. Some of this in this one you're replacing various different words in an array, and this would be extremely handy in certain situations as a very clean and easy way to replace, I don't know, the first character of a file or the last part of a file.
Hopefully it's useful. The array thing in Bash I think is really cool, which is why I've been going on about it so much.
Yeah.
Of course, I feel like an idiot now, but that's fine.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Resizing images for vCard in Android was the next one. Automating the steps needed to get images formatted for vCard import into Android phones. This actually is part of my replacing, you know, having a free and open source phone using Lineage OS and owning all your data. So as part of that, the vCard thing was one thing that I needed to be able to do. So more on that. But this was just a show that allowed you to basically explain that if you want to have images in your vCards, there is a specific format that they must be. It's not like you can throw any image in there and expect it to work, because it won't. And then just automating the process of doing that. And the realization that Graphics Magic is fantastic tool, a lot better than Image Magic.
That's what I was going to say. I didn't know anything about Graphics Magic. Now I have to look into it.
It's a fork, and it's been maintained. So, okay. Yeah, and the documentation is just saner, I think, a lot saner.
Yeah, documentation on Image Magic is a bit, how can I say that politely?
Yes.
You know.
Old.
Yeah.
I really loved Image Magic when I first encountered it, after reading all that documentation, which was not easy to read. But it falls out of your head as soon as you put it in, I find. Whereas this, as you say, does seem to be more logical. I'm definitely going to learn my way around Graphics Magic, use that all the time. So it's really, really helpful show to sort of broaden my horizons, I think.
The amount of stuff you can do with both Image Magic and Graphic Magic is like phenomenal. Really, really good tools for doing manipulation of image.
Yeah, so, I use that. Sorry, I use the Image Magic to generate podcast episode cover art automatically from you know, episode number, date, etc., etc.
Do you have a script for that, and you can?
I did when I was actively publishing my podcast. I can look into it and see if I still have the script.
Throw it over here, because I want to do something similar.
Okay.
So then, we had my 8-bit Christmas. Andrew Conway got what turned out to be a present that every little boy wanted. Turo Toto says, amazing memories. I never actually owned a BBC, but read about them a lot when I was a kid. Same here. Especially Elite was touted as the best space game ever, and the BBC version being superior in every possible way. Thanks for making the episode. It sure resurrected a bunch of old memories. Speaking of old people, the next comment is read by Dave.
Hey, Dave. Thanks, Ken.
Dave, the aged, as he's known.
Rolling back, Dave, shortly.
Ah, dear. I know how your friends are, eh? So I said this was a real treat. It's a great episode. I'm jealous. So much nostalgia. I actually bought a BBC Micro in about 1981, having previously owned an Acorn. It was actually an Electron, not an Atom, I think. I used to teach a class in BASIC using Acorn Electron. What's more, I still have the though it's molded away many years in the attic. I bought the Z80 coprocessor, the Prestel adapter, which is just a modem in a beige box, a dual floppy disk drive, a bunch of other stuff, including a RGB monitor. It's my main computer for many years. It's been something I've been meaning to do for some time, resurrect these devices. Replacement of all the dead electrolytic capacitors might be more than I can manage, but I'll have a go. If not, then I know I can buy a properly refurbished one off eBay. Smiley face. I hope you'll do more shows about your experiences with this magnificent machine.
Yeah.
Playing the part of John Culp is Yannick.
John Culp commented, I love legacy hardware. That's the title of the comment. I loved this episode, all in all caps. I think I like anything about retro equipment, making old stuff work again using legacy equipment formats. This was great. My own interest is mainly audio, but it's great hearing about any of these old tech products that are still usable or are being refurbished and loved again. Thanks.
Yes, I think definitely this sounds like there's enough enthusiasm for a series here on this type of thing. The last comment on this show was by Tim Timmy. First contact. Thanks for the show, Andrew. My first contact with any computer was the BBC in the big class, final year at primary school. I can vividly remember playing Granny's Garden, link in the show notes, when I was 9 or 10. Then at secondary school, while everybody was messing around with the new Windows 3.1 i386 machines, I spent days on the only BBC left in the school typing code in from a magazine called Quest, link in the show notes. The code was some sort of database program, but I never ever worked, and so far above my skill set to debug, I just sat on my five and a half inch floppy designed to stay in my school bag until the end of time. I actually gasped and swore when you jogged. Well, set a nuclear bomb off in my memory with the two words star dot. I had forgotten how simple the commands were. Anyway, please, please do a follow-up show. I would love to hear more about the BBC and see how much I can remember. Oh no, there's loads more comments.
Go on. That's what I was going to say.
Shall I do the next one?
Please.
RTSN says comment with zero. I don't know if you meant that. Thanks for this wonderful episode. The BBC seems like a pretty cool machine. More episodes on this, please.
And then Mike Ray says, Genus. I spent probably most of the first half of the 80s playing Elite on the BBC Micro, or Donkey Kong, or writing code for it. Last time I used the one, was to calculate the position of the moon and steer a huge VHF antenna array to point at it.
Wow.
Late 80s and early 90s. Yeah, that's amazing.
Hashtag show.
Yeah, we need a show
Mike.
About that. Wasn't ideal since the ADC port was only 11 bit, so not great accuracy with the moon's position. Could not have pointed Jodrell Bank with sufficient definition. I don't know what Jodrell Bank is, but anyway.
It's a big radio telescope in near Manchester.
Okay. I could see that back then. I am very jealous of all those classic 8-bit classic games at your fingertips and all loading fast. You must have been sick when the PSU blew up. Last question, where can I find a wife like that?
That's excellent. First experience I had with a BBC Micro was in third level. They were still using them because it was the only way to interface with relays and stuff. You could poke eight and it would just turn it on, which is awesome.
When I worked at the university job I had, before PCs, we all were given a BBC Micro on our desks. So that was the main machine we used for writing documents and accessing the mainframe in many cases. So yeah, it was an amazingly popular machine. We also had... We had EEPROM programmers and used to generate our own EEPROMs for the things, et cetera, et cetera. Gosh, there's a whole series there.
Yes. Very good. I'm looking forward to it. The following show was Storytelling Formula, where Klaatu ruins every movie I ever watched, Klaatu. Thank you. Oh my god. Every movie I liked has been ruined. Thank you very much. But, yes. It is. I think it's a glimpse behind the curtain, actually. But, yeah. What did you think of this one?
Well, it's... I get a little bit bored with movies these days because they seem formulaic. And in many, many cases, the ones that really surprise you are quite exciting. But I just find it so interesting to see it broken down at this level. Because although I know it's a bit of a formula and I'm bored, I don't know why. And I haven't ever expended the mental exercise to find out why. And Klaatu has actually opened a door as far as that's concerned. I'll probably still be bored, but I'll know, be able to analyze it and think, why am I bored with this?
Yeah. No, I think to be joking aside, he even does say in it, just because it's following the formula doesn't necessarily make it a bad movie. But sometimes you can see them following the formula and you're thinking, that should have been a good movie, but it wasn't. And I didn't know about the formula, you know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, you know, boy gets girl back, you know, is essentially the formula, but in a diluted set.
Yeah. But yeah, now we can watch the movies and see, they made a mistake here. They didn't follow the formula. Or you can, I mean, even before listening to the episode, there's some movies where you watch for 10 minutes and then you say, okay, here's what's going to happen.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, very true.
They're trying too hard to follow the formula.
I wonder, and this is something, Yannick, that you as our official foreign person, is this formula is very Hollywood-y. I wonder, is this a universal thing in storytelling that we expect this? I mean, I don't think... probably France and Switzerland are not far enough away. I wonder in what Asian cultures do they follow the formula? Does the formula work everywhere? Does it work in Inuit tribes? Does it work in South America? Does it, you know, regardless of your background, or are we now all so brainwashed that we all expect this formula?
I would tend to say that it's more of the later. That we're so used to Hollywood movies being done like that we kind of every movie to be the same, following the same general formula. And that's when movies, you know, when they don't follow this pattern, then that's when they can be very interesting. But also I think they lose some audience, and that's what makes those movies particularly we tend to say that French movies are not as good as US movies. That's probably because they don't follow this formula to the letter, and still they are very good movies, but I think less people go watch them because of that.
Yeah, because you don't know what you're going to get.
You're not
going to get that satisfied feeling at the end.
Yeah, that's kind of an expectation when you go to the movie to see, okay, I'm going to see a very nice story, and it's a new story, but still I don't want to be surprised, or you know, because if I don't know what I'm going to see, maybe I don't want to spend some money on that because I don't want to be disappointed. It's a shame because there are very good movies that don't follow this pattern.
Yeah, but again. Okay, I was very harsh and sat you there, and I did intend it as a didn't intend to be harsh or whatever. But this actually reminds, as I was thinking about what Klaatu put in the show here, it reminds me why I like Terry Pratchett books, because there's a safety in them where there's a kind of formula that you know what the formula kind of is, and you know it's all going to work out okay in the end. And Lost in Bronx, when David Collins Rivera writes this story, you do not know whether that's going to be a happy-go-lucky story. it may be following the formula as well, but you don't know what type of story it's going to be. So there's a little bit of more fear and angst when you approach a Lost in Bronx production, because you don't know what it's going to be. Eddie Kay, you know it's going to be a comedy show, but in his whole Star Drifter series, he's had some very lighthearted stuff and some very dark stuff at the same time. I don't really know if that's got anything to do with the formula or not, but yeah, it's the you know it's going to turn out okay type thing. Right, that was a diversion. Truncate silence has removed the long silence there. Again. What is Ken on about?
No, no, no. I'm just sort of cogitating here because I don't really actually spend enough brain power thinking about these things. So it's a bit of a revelation for me in some respects. So
3-hour commute, Dave. 3-hour commute.
Yeah,
will have you
yeah, 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 yeah. And the comment about the French movies is actually quite interesting. I was just trying to remember what I've seen in the distant past that I really like. Le Grand Chemin, or something I saw years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know what the hell the story was about. It was just so pleasing. I just found it when I could never find a copy of it on DVD or anything. But anyway, yeah. It's a lot like that, I think.
My favorite French movie is Amélie, but it follows the formula.
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Though in a rather idiosyncratic way.
Yes, as may be. But it's a, you know, this is why all my nice movies have been ruined by Chateau.
I like Amélie so much. I spent a week in Paris going around all the places from the movie, you know. Il dort dans les chauffleurs. I tried to find that place. I never did. You know, where the guy falls asleep in the cauliflowers?
No, I don't, but... you know, they often make up places' names and things like that.
Yeah. I know. But it's just quite nice to like a film so much and go to the place where it was shot.
Mm-hmm.
It's just fandom.
Okay, enough about this week in movie making. But Klaatu can feel free to do more of these type of shows. But I think Klaatu will do is whatever shows that he wants us to do. Writing web game in Haskell, news and notifications. Turototo talks about the game they're writing in Haskell, convoluted news system they make. This seems like a very small amount of code in order to be able to do an API sort of exchange.
Yeah.
Very, very small amount of code.
Well, I know I was thinking that too. Because he talks about how the sort of queue of news messages is in a database. I couldn't see anywhere that it was accessing a database, except that, you know, there's JSON structures that presumably are held in the database. I must be missing something. I don't know.
Yeah, but is that not what the data declaration is? Is it an in-memory database?
Yeah, maybe so, yeah.
Wow, this guy's brain is just operating on a completely different level to mine.
And yet, it still gives me the urge to look into Askel. So there's something special.
Yeah, it's like he's got a screenshot right there showing it working. Unbelievable. Well, not unbelievable. It's just, fine. One man's effort to get us all converted to writing in Haskell.
See, I'd be lost. I'd be lost in the font and the icons and the layout and stuff.
Yeah,
Where it looks like if you're writing in Haskell, you can just get to the meat of it, and you probably need to know a lot more than I do in order to achieve that. But just. It seems so lightweight in terms of its expressiveness.
I really hope he doesn't stop sending in shows, because like we're acting like dummies here, not knowing what he's doing. But I really do hope that in the fullness of time, I will be sitting down and writing my Hello World program in Haskell.
Yeah. I started reading the book, but I don't. It's got me nowhere as far as this is concerned.
Anyway. The following day, Mash Potter, a poor rushed attempt at covering an excellent podcast client by Mashpotter. And I was reading that thinking, that was a fair, some comments came in on this show, and I was thinking, God, that's a very harsh sort of comment to write to somebody, but it's actually the the title by Mr. X himself, so that's fine.
It was not that rushed.
Not at all.
I mean, yeah, it was 20 minutes long, so it's not that rushed.
I think it was rushed that he just went and did an episode off the cuff.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
Which is one way to do it, you know. You want to, because if you put too many thoughts into it and you say, okay, I'm going to do that. Never mind.
Procrastination has caused so many fucking shows here on this episode, on this network. Sorry for using the F word, guys. But procrastination is the killer of this network. I'll tell you right now.
Yeah, yeah. So whenever you want to share something, pick up your phone, hit record, send this for the file to one of us. I mean, if
record
you
record and send, that's it. Couldn't be easier.
And if you don't know how to upload, how to do things like that, just send us the file. We'll do that for you.
Yes, Mr. X has got a lot of skills, and he doesn't realize that he can make really nice, really good podcasts just off the cuff. I think it's sort of him saying that he can't. He's apologizing for doing it that way, but I think it's some of his best work is done that way.
Yeah, more of that type of thing. Comments we had. Tlatu.
Yes.
Who wants to do the voice of Tlatu?
Okay, I will. Tlatu said, coincidentally, I've resumed using Mashpotter for podcatching just recently. The audio jack on my mobile failed, rendering my mobile functionally useless as a podcast listening device. So I dug out an old media player loaded with Rockbox, and I use it as my listening device. For one day, I tried loading it manually with podcasts, and then realized that I needed something to manage show downloads for me. And Mashpotter is what I turned to. I started modifying it so that it would run an arbitrary script, such as a conversion script, but got distracted. Maybe later.
Shall I do Mr. X's?
Please.
He says, re-coincidentally. Hi, Tlatu. I took some advice from our friend Dave Morris, who he suggested I might like to use the RSS feed to keep track of comments. Yes, I did do that. I got hold of a simple RSS reader, on the Android Play Store. It seems to be working out great, as I was alerted to your comment. Without the reader, months may have gone by before stumbling across your comments. Mashpotter is ripe for modifying, especially since it's so well written with loads of good comments. I have plenty of unfinished projects, so I can relate to what you're saying. All the best, Mr. X.
And Mashpotter was written by friend of the show, Chess Griffin, who I think has done more for Linux than a lot of people would be aware of. He was a podcaster, did the 100 episodes of Linux Reality. And if somebody wants to go back and listen to them, I imagine they would be as fresh now as they were the day they were produced.
Yes, his Mashpotter is great, actually. I only realized recently, having looked at it following this show, that he's actually handled the situation that Bashpotter never did, which is if a feed is syntactically incorrect, Bashpotter crashes because it uses XSLT proc, which says, nah, this is not valid, XML, go away. Whereas Mashpotter actually falls back to using sed, I think, to pick the enclosures, which, you know, is just really good design. I like that. I don't know whether it handles Atom. It didn't used to, but it's pretty easy to modify it to make it.
Okay, the next episode. I have no clue how to pronounce that, Dave. Wikipedia.
Oh, sorry, yeah, sofrito.
Thank you.
Cooking lessons.
Cooking stuff. Really, not my thing. Although, that said, we sit down and watch The Great British Bake Off, the entire thing. We bought it on DVD. Why? I don't know. Now I know all the reasons.
Hold on one second.
You know what's funny? I kind of like cooking, but I don't like cooking for myself, you know. So I always look at recipes and things like that and say, oh, that looks good. I want to do that. I want to do that. And then I say, yeah, but why? I mean, I'm going to cook that for myself, which is good. But yeah, so I think if I had like good reason, you know, and a bunch of people to feed, then
yes. I feel the same way. I probably just do egg on toast or something for myself. But my kids come and eat with me every week for a couple of nights. I make them food to just save them some money,
and
I cook twice a week for them. So yeah, I really look forward to doing that from the point of view of what shall I do for them this time, you know, and make it particularly interesting and pleasant or whatever, you know. So
Yeah, I do have my daughter every other weekend, so I kind of have to cook. But since she's only 3 and a half, she doesn't really care about what's in her plate. Anyway.
Yes. The curry I made on Wednesday was so popular that they wanted to come back on Friday and help me finish it off. So, but wow, it was a lot of work in that one, I tell you. But I find it. Really enjoy it.
I mean, you spend like hours preparing something that's gone in 15 minutes.
Oh yeah, definitely.
If it's good.
Yeah, if it's good, yeah.
It's a good sign, of course.
Absolutely. We could do with more cooking shows, I think.
Yes, we can. Especially, beginner's level. And I would love that.
Yes.
Yeah. That was the note I made to myself. But let's have more cookery, please.
Well, the following day, we had response to show 2720, where Ken was brought back in time to the parent-teacher meetings, sit down before his teachers, where they go, Ken, you know, if you only just applied yourself, could do better.
You know, it's how I apologize for.
Yeah, but I noticed you still did it, Dave.
Well, you know, there's this guy who keeps saying we need shows, and there you go, you got a show.
Not at all. but that's the thing about open source software, free, libre, open source, blah blah blah, whatever. You think, oh, I want to put it out there, and it's absolutely perfect, and then you say stuff, and you go, okay, yeah, that's obvious. I should have fixed that.
Yeah.
Especially the egrep. I know that, and I've stopped using egrep and have switched to moving using just grep, capital E. But for some reason, I don't go back and refactor my scripts. So.
Well, yeah, no, I mean, I don't do that as much as I should. But the part of the point of doing this is the fact, and the reason I demonstrated the use of shell check was that it nagged you so much that you have to. I was sort of passing on its nagging to you. which is good. It's good to have something telling you no, that won't work, or you've made a mistake here and it will fail under these circumstances. So it is good, but it's a little irritating, but it does improve the quality of what you write. So
no, I did. I did laugh. I was chuckling as you were doing this episode. So
I, for one,
it could have been worse. It could have been a lot worse.
I didn't know that egrep was deprecated, for example. So I learned something.
Yeah. Well, this is what Shellcheck told me. I didn't know either. Don't use that. Use this.
So 29th of the month, we had my Pioneer RT707 reel-to-reel tape deck.
Yay.
By JWP. Sorry, JWP. Not at all. John Culp. From Lafayette, Louisiana. Loads of comments. John sent in an update saying the tape counter is now functioning. Follow up. Research on the issue indicates that a non-functioning tape counter in this machine was about 99% likely to be from a broken belt. The reels are direct drive, but the belt turns the counter. I got a replacement belt from eBay, installed it today, and happy to report that everything is working perfectly now.
Yeehaw!
Bookworm says, ancient media. I just finished listening to the episode and wow, I love finding and listening to older media. The crown jewel in my collection is an Edison record. Sadly, it came to me broken, but I do have all the pieces and the cardboard storage cylinder is whole. So even if I do ever find a player, I couldn't play it. For those interested, here's a link to the Edison to info on Edison cylinder records.
And then John replied, Victrola episode. Thanks for your comments, Bookworm. It's too bad about your Edison disc. If you enjoyed this episode about open reel tape, then you might enjoy one I did a few years ago about my Victrola in episode 1339. Incidentally, I recently discovered a guy on YouTube who does amazing videos about legacy audio formats, a user called Techmoan. These are just awesome. I highly recommend subscribing.
I'll do mine. I said, wow, what a beautiful tape deck. Thanks, John. This was a wonderful voyage of nostalgia. As a teenager, I had a portable Clarion tape deck, and I gave a link to one in a museum site, which I bought from my cousin. It got a lot of use, and I learned how to splice tape and make tape loops back then. I'd record the latest hit records off the radio to share with friends and family. I did some basic repairs on the player and learned to solder when the leads and plugs needed fixing. The Clarion died eventually and probably got junked, sadly. I always wanted but never acquired a big reel-to-reel player like a Grundig, Philips, TIAC or whatever. Great to hear about your adventures in this area.
And John said, I want one. Wow, Dave, I really wish you still had that Clarion tape machine. I love stuff like that. A portable reel-to-reel tape deck is definitely on my wish list of vintage audio. Incidentally, the YouTuber Technoman did an amazing episode about the tape decks of Mission Impossible featuring the Craig 212. And thanks for the feedback.
Yeah, I follow that guy. Have you seen him? Techmoan, do you ever follow him?
I've seen a few of his episodes, but haven't subscribed.
I actually had a small tape deck when I was a young boy.
A youth.
You know what? I think I kind of did my first podcast episode back then because I was recording stuff from the radio, and then I had a microphone, and then I would turn the recording on the tape and say stupid things, and then play another song. That's the closest thing to a podcast.
See, with mine, I used to sneak it into sort of family gatherings and put the microphone under a cushion and record them and stuff, and then play them back later on. Ha ha! I got you. So my drive was more to be a spy than it was to be a DJ. Yeah.
You get into a lot of trouble doing that.
Yeah, I can imagine that. Yeah. I was amazed at the quality of the sound that we heard in this episode. When he was playing the audio, it's amazing that you can still get such a good quality out of those 20-30 years tapes.
It's, you'd think they would sort of gradually leak through, print through, because that's what happens with tape, doesn't it? So yeah, they must be particularly high quality.
Right, moving on. My applications. This is Tony Hughes sending in the show about the apps he uses because we were short of shows. But I think this is a very, very useful insight into what people are using. Thunderbird for Gmail, LibreOffice, VLC, Audacity, obviously.
VLC, VLC is a software that you either like or hate. I think there's no middle range for VLC. There's a lot of people who don't like VLC because it's either not working for them or
VLC
they
not
didn't
working.
Like the Express. I've never seen VLC not working, but apparently it's a thing. Maybe it has to do with video cards, maybe, I don't know. But I know a lot of people who absolutely don't like VLC and they replace it with whatever they like. I like VLC. I think it's really useful. It never failed me.
I personally use mPlayer on the command line for everything.
just because it's so simple.
And yeah,
control it for, you know, there's no menus, no nothing, just M player, few shortcuts, and then it plays. And then you've got your command keyboard shortcuts for all sorts of stuff, and pausing, rewinding, fast-forwarding one frame at a time if necessary.
Okay, I don't know this one, but I will
could be a show there. Could be a show.
could be.
Yeah, I'd like to hear that.
Yes, Dave. Bash scripting, supplementary auxiliary bash scripts. What was this one about, Dave? Let me see. Supplementary.
Supplemental.
Sorry, yes.
Got an algorithm that makes these. So, yeah, declare and read only in local and map file.
Yes. I heard that on the bus on Friday, actually.
These are really cool. I was very pleased that I discovered these and learned how to use them.
The read array thing, the map file thing is a bit of a new concept for me, I must say.
Yeah.
I need to let that one sink in.
Yes, I saw its existence a year or two back and thought, I can do it fine without that. I don't want to have to read out how to work out how to use it. But now I've actually understood it. I found it really, really quite good.
This is another one of the ones I'm going to have to put on my list of, there's a reason why I will need that. But the problem now with your shows, Dave, is there's so many of them that I'm finding it impossible to go back and find the, you know, where you discussed particular things.
Yeah, me too. I have to make an index or do something like that.
Yeah. You have to do a show indexing all your shows.
That's right. Yeah, just read through all the topics and say, see, show so-and-so, see, show such-and-such. Yeah, that'd be great. No, but I do plan to make some sort of a document stitching all this together. I keep saying this, but I do plan to do it.
Well, what's going on?
I think we're done with the last month's show.
Yep. Looks like it. What comes next, Dave?
So next, we need to look at the older comments, I think, don't we?
Yes, the oldest show is from Comment Thoughts on Learning a Language Part 3, the game story mode by DODD Dummy. And the comment was by himself, the Stanley Parable. And it was an answer to Joel H., who had left a comment going about the Stanley Parable. And DODD Dummy says, just read your comment. I think it would work just fine in a first-person exploratory game, as I've thought about this and games more. I can't think of a game type this wouldn't work in, actually. As I've thought about it. Okay, anyway. First-person mode would be interesting in the thoughts could switch from initially being in the native language but switching to the new language as the progress is made. That's a sort of ideal situation, I suppose, in general. If you can think of in the new language, I suppose you've won, which is correct. So this was about his idea to have a game and learn a language through using a game.
Yeah.
Do you want to do explaining the controls?
I'll do that. Yes, 2668, comment number 3 from Mr. X, saying he's replying to Michael. Many thanks for the comment, much appreciated. Very sorry for taking so long in replying. I'm not very good at checking for new comments, probably for the same reason I didn't include the interesting noise from my tuner. Afraid it all boils down to time or lack of. I had to set things up and make a separate recording. I was just keen to get the show finished. My apologies. Again, the same reason for not giving audio examples of the noise blanker. Also, thanks for the information on relays. Having never owned a modern HF radio, I assumed they would be silent. Thanks for the clarification. But it was just as an aside, I pointed Mr. X to the comment feed so he could keep an eye on whether anybody had written to him with a comment. And it was that.
Yep.
That prompted me to do it. So he seems to be a lot happier finding that.
Yep. If you
just to close the loop there.
you click on the P of public radio, isn't that it? Yep. Or yes. R of public radio.
Yes, yes, yes.
So, Mr. Yeah, do you want to do it?
Yeah. And then Mr. X also replied to Lost in Bronx. So the original comment was, wonderful mic and very classy meter, great app overall. So Mr. X said, hi, yes, indeed, wonderful microphone. Unfortunately, I've never had the pleasure of using such a mic myself. The picture was actually to show an example of a radio with a moving analog tuning needle that moves across the front of the radio. The microphone just happened to be in the picture. The AVO meter is indeed a classic and something I have personally used on numerous occasions many years ago. They look like something out of an old horror film and are very heavy, built to last. Best wishes, Mr. X.
Nice, nice. He's right about the old horror film type things. So, on Dave Morris's Bash Tips 16, DODD Dummy says, in case you're worried, Dave will run out of material. And he gives a link to a new message. Bash 5!
Excellent. Yay! 18 more episodes on Bash 5, and what's different from Bash 4?
Well, that was my reply, pretty much. Yes, I just saw that on Mastodon. I said, thanks for the heads up. Oh, boy. Lots of fun for me. Infinite vistas of tedium for my audience. Hooray!
Not at all, Dave. Not at all.
No, I actually got Bash 5 because I run Debian testing. I just looked the other day. Oh, it's 5 already. So, yeah, I should have to start writing some shows straight away.
So the last few comments were on the Stegnography.
Stegnography.
Thank you. By Tattoo. And he was saying to our comments about were there winners in the last month's show. No lucky winners. Nobody emailed me revealing that they'd found the hidden object. To be fair, there wasn't much time. It was around the holidays and people are busy. I should look at the server's logs to see how many people actually downloaded the sample PDF containing the payload. I believe most listeners consume HPR from the RSS and never see the show notes. And all of my subtle hints that there was more than meets the eye about this mini series were only in the show notes. Anyway, it was a fun experiment and interesting data about whatever that word is, and the PDF format.
Yeah, I think he's right on that. Most people consume podcasts from the RSS directly in the podcatcher, and probably not in a place where they have access to a computer while listening. So there's a whole subject on, is a website useful for a podcast or not? Going around in the different podcasts I listen to, podcast about podcasting. So yeah, putting stuff in the show notes without actually referring to them in the actual show has very little chance of being seen.
Well, for HPR, you have this very strange thing where 50% of the people, and it is about 50% of the people, listen via the RSS feed only and don't hit the website. And then quite a lot of other people only go to the website and download episodes from there. So,
well, okay. Very, very strange. Yeah, that's not typical, but we are
unique, I think, in many respects.
Yeah.
And Tattoo also said, thanks, Scott. Thanks for the comment and offer, Scott. I'm more a coffee drinker and rarely in Seattle anymore. Sorry, Cincinnati anymore.
Cincinnati.
But drinking and talking about tech is pretty much my favorite pastime. So if I'm in the area, I'll absolutely broadcast it on the HPR mailing list so I can take you up on your offer, where you offered to meet up for a coffee and stuff. So, excellent. And that brings us up to date with the comments, doesn't it, Dave?
It does indeed, yes, yes.
So let's mosey over to the HPR mailing list and see what else is happening. There were calls for shows.
Many calls for shows.
And that was about it. And yes, then we were... Yeah, Google Plus is shutting down on April the 2nd. So you have 1 month to get your files, photos, anything that you posted up there is going to be deleted in a month. So
back up your data now before it's gone. Do you want to do the next one?
Well, you shouldn't have anything on Google Plus that don't have anywhere else anyway, so...
Yeah. Well, it's going away for sure, and
yeah,
you only have a limited amount of time to get your stuff off there. So if you don't, then, yeah, if you have any stuff up there, go and get it now, just to be on the safe side. And Mad Sweeney wrote in to tell us about DNS Flag Day, and some software and service providers, basically Google, Facebook, etc., have agreed to coordinate removing accommodation for non-compliant DNS implementations from their software or services on or around February the 1st, 2019. So if you go to dnsflagday.net and have a look to see if your domains are going to be affected by this decision by people. Dave, do you want to do the missing tags?
Yes. The only thing to say is that in the last month, we've managed to get 11 more shows upgraded with tags and summaries and that
awesome
sort of stuff. So that was me rushing about thinking, shit, we haven't done any of these for ages and ages. I better get some ready before community news. So, but please, if you have a moment and you'd like to look back at the old shows and feel like contributing to the project, do so, because we could do with more progress.
Can I ask the hosts who have hosted just to go and do their own shows? That would be just the simplest thing. If you are a host, can you go back, click into the About page there and click on Hosts, go into your own page and basically send in a list of tags for your own shows? I will do that.
Yep. In fact, it's listed... It's in the report missingtags.php page. It's ordered by hosts who and the shows that still need tags and whatever. So
yeah, because if you've hosted the show, you don't even need to go back and re-listen. You know what it was about.
You got me worried for a moment. I thought I didn't add tags to my shows, but they are.
They get added by Dave. Now.
Do gradually get there. Yeah, if they're not there as the shows come through, then I add them because I wrote my scripts that upload them to nag me, saying I'm not going to do this because there's no tags. So it forces me to do it.
Okay, guys, is there anything else that we need to discuss?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either.
Okay, so without further ado, tune in next week for another exciting episode of
Hacker
Public
Radio!
Yeehaw!
Join us now and share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.